good Thursday evening, everybody. I am Roger LeJoie. Nice to be with you here for Aces, our tennis show here on Sportsnet Radio, the Fan 590. Our email box is roger@fan590.com. Great to hear from you folks. roger@fan590.com. We've had so many emails the first couple of shows. We are here on selected Thursday nights throughout the tennis season. We do about 12 shows a year. And your response has been fantastic. We've got a great trivia prize coming up later in the program for you, as we always do. We have some terrific guests coming up on the program. And this first segment of Aces is brought to you by Tennis Canada. To get up-to-the-minute tennis news and scores, visit lovesmeansnothing.ca. Tennis is spoken here. Now, I'm in studio. You heard the intro. Tom Tebbit is the co-host. There's something seriously wrong with this program. I mean, I'm sitting here in the Toronto studio, and the guy who's supposed to be the host of this program driving it is at a cafe in Gay Paris. First of all, Tebbit, you know how baseball managers say, I'm protesting the game? I am protesting edition three of Aces on those grounds, sir.
Well, Roger, actually, 1 hour ago, I was in a cafe at Alma, not far from this end, and sadly not far from where Princess Diana died, may not sound very exciting, but having a tarte aux pommes à la mode, which you probably know means apple pie and ice cream. And I tell you, Raj, the best one I've ever had.
I don't know why I find that absolutely hysterical. The thought of you having some apple pie and ice cream around La Tour Eiffel, an exciting day. Well, Tom, great to have you on the show. We got a busy program. You did some great interviews, and we'll have them out the course of the show, and we'll have your trivia question later in the show as well. Hey, listen, first of all, the atmosphere, the French Open, you've been to so many of these events. They don't call it a Grand Slam event for nothing. This is one of the great events on the tennis calendar for sure.
Well, it is. In a lot of ways, you know, it's Europe's Grand Slam because a lot of the European players, most of the European players, play and grow up on red clay. They obviously grow up indoors now a little bit as well and on hard courts. But really, the red clay is their native surface here. So most of the European players, this is kind of the biggest one for them. So, and a lot of tourists come here as well from the European countries. So it's a huge deal. And they've been getting fantastic crowds. And there's just always a really special atmosphere in Paris because the French crowds like to participate. Even if the umpire gets down out of his or her chair to go look at a mark on the baseline, that's enough for whistles or boos or whatever. All they did was go check a mark, but they just need an excuse to get excited and get involved. So it's a different atmosphere, really, than any other Grand Slam event. And obviously all the attributes of Paris, the style, the good food, the beautiful architecture, all those things manifest themselves as well as at Roland Garros.
No, it sounds fantastic. How does it compare to New York in terms of the crowd? Because they can get pretty rude and unruly, too. I've never been to a French Open in Paris. I've been to Paris twice in my life, but I've never been to a French Open. But I have been to one U.S. Open in New York, and I couldn't believe how raucous those crowds get. Is it something similar or is it different?
I think in New York it might be a little more menacing because when you're probably talking about those Rockets crowds, you're probably talking about night matches, and people are a little bit fueled, I think, at that point. So you're injecting another little sort of, different thing into the mix. So I think that they both get very involved, but here it's probably a little bit more civilized. And as I say, once they get liquored up at the U.S. Open, you're introducing something that gives everybody else, everybody watching, just a little bit more of an edge. And there was a famous match there a long time ago between Nastasi and McEnroe, and they were throwing things on the court and going nuts. And you really haven't had anything that bad here in Paris. But no, they're both really involved. And the nice thing about the four Grand Slams is they're all really different in their own way, and they're all great fun to be at.
Tom Tebbit is in Paris at the French Open. I'm Roger LeJoie. You're listening to Aces on Sportsnet Radio, The Fan 590. Full show coming up for you here until 8 o'clock tonight right here on Sportsnet Radio, The Fan 590. And thanks again for your comments. You can always email the show at roger@fan590.com. And we'll especially want your emails in the last segment. Tom will leave us after this segment. He's left a trivia question, a couple of great interviews for you. And we've got a fantastic prize, as always. Tom, I'll tell you one thing about this program. It's absolutely terrific that we can give people an opportunity to go see the Rogers Cup, get some great Wilson tennis balls as well later in the show.
Yeah, I think we have a couple of cans of Wilson U.S. Open tennis balls, and obviously the tickets for, I think it's Monday, August the 8th, the first night, which is a match night that every year they try to make extra special in some way. And I know there are some plans this year for maybe the Williams sisters, but we'll have to see about those health issues. But if they make it, that'll be a lot of fun for everybody who goes.
Well, without question. So, Tom, before we get to French Open, where the tournament's at now, and get your thoughts on that, we do have an email or two that I want to get to, and I just want to acknowledge some of them, first of all. Gary and Brian, in particular, are regular emailers to the show, and we're very complimentary, so I want to acknowledge them. And Doug was an emailer last year, and we did the show several times, Tom. And if I can quickly just read this to you and get your response, because this is something you can help. First of all, I don't know what you know about the Tennis Channel and being available to Roger subscribers. I know there's a Tennis Channel out there, and that's something I can find out here at the station. But his particular question for you is, why is the Tennis Replay Challenge not used in all top ATP and WTA tournaments, especially the four majors, even though the French Open is on clay? Is there just not too much of a risk in picking out a wrong ball mark in some top clay tournaments with so many ball marks on the court? The new tennis ball used in the French Open, is it intended more for speed on clay tournaments only and won't be used on grass or hard court surfaces? And again, Doug, thanks for the support of the show. Tom, you want to take a crack at that?
Well, I mean, Hakai is used at the three other Grand Slams. It's just not used at the French Open. And I think that's just because it's a little bit of pigheadedness, but just the idea that there actually is a mark, and there is a tradition, as I mentioned earlier, about the umpires coming down out of the chair and checking the marks, or possibly the line person going out as well. So they don't really want to change that. They just think that there is a sort of a physical proof right there what happened. So why bother having Hakai? But they do have Hakai here, and they've been showing it on TV at times. So it's sort of interesting. I think it's sort of silly not to use it, because sometimes you can have some discussion about which mark it is, or maybe you have a ball that lands right on top of the previous mark. And Hakai, as far as I can tell, I'm very impressed with it. I really think it pretty well gets it bang on every time. So it seems like a bit of a silly thing that they don't really use it here at the French Open. And they use it at, I think, most of the Master Series and the Women's Premier events. Sometimes there's a question of money, how much it costs, they don't use it. But, and there was, of course, this year at Indian Wells, the tournament there, they used it on every single competition court, something like 8 courts. So maybe that's the wave of the future.
Okay, thanks for that answer, and thanks for the email once again. Tom Tebbit online with us in Paris. I'm Roger Lajoie. Aces here on Sportsnet Radio, the Fan 590. Okay, Lee Na's got a chance to make some history. Let's handicap the women's final, of course, and boy, we've got some big names left in this tournament on all sides, including our own Daniel Nestor. But let's start with the ladies.
Well, I mean, I think Lee Na is a fantastic athlete, and that's the main thing. And I thought she had a good shot against Sharapova today just because of that. On the clay, you know, you just can't hit big shots and necessarily have them go for winners. They're probably going to come back. And when you get somebody who moves as well on the court as Lee Na, then, you know, it's really hard to get the ball by her. And I think that was basically Sharapova's problem. She made a lot of mistakes, but I think some of those are a result of the fact that she has to make it extra good just to get the ball by Lee Na. So I think it's going to be great to see her in the final against Schiavone. I mean, Schiavone obviously is the defending champion, and she played very well today in her win over the French player Marion Bartoli. And she just has all the shots, and she has just a lot of gumption and enterprise, and she's just really fun to watch. And Lee Na is not afraid to hit a lot of different shots herself. So I think that's a great matchup. Possibly have to give a bit of an edge to Schiavone because of the experience factor, but I think they're 2-2 in their lifetime head-to-head, and I think it should be a very entertaining match for people. And obviously, you got 1.3 billion people watching in China, and you know who they're cheering for.
Oh, for sure. What a story it is, and what would it mean to China if she could pull it off? We'll see. Well, you talk about the men's side and some fantastic matchups in the semi. I mean, Roger and Novak and Nadal and Murray. Tom, it doesn't get much better than that when you talk about the heavyweights going toe-to-toe here.
Well, exactly. Obviously, you've got the top four players, you know, the seeds 1, 2, 3, and 4, and you can't ask for much more than that. I would say that the top three guys have gotten there, you know, pretty well maybe the way you thought they would. Nadal was a little bit maybe off form at the beginning, but he's been fantastic since his last match against Soderling. Federer's been solid all the way through. Same thing with Djokovic. With Murray, has really had, you know, quite a trip to the semifinals, and after his third match, he tripped his ankle in that match. He's got a torn tendon in his ankle. He won his round of 16, his quarterfinal matches, somehow despite it. I'm still not that convinced that he can really be that good against Nadal tomorrow, so I would definitely pick Nadal in that match. But Federer, Djokovic is going to be terrific. There's a lot on the line with Djokovic going for his 42nd win, which would tie McEnroe's record in 1984 off the beginning of the year. And just the fact that Federer has played well, I think it gives him much more of a shot than a lot of people would think. But you got to remember that Djokovic has beaten him 3 times this year, fairly convincingly each time. And Djokovic, I've rarely seen anything like this. This guy's gone up a level. He's just playing phenomenal tennis. And I think it's going to take a heck of an effort from Federer to beat him tomorrow.
Well, it should be great. No doubt the matchups are fantastic. Daniel Nestor, we got to get a word on him before we talk about the interviews we got coming up later on the show. Once again, the beat just goes on for him in doubles, boy.
Yeah, I was just checking. I think he played his first Canadian Open, which is now called the Rogers Cup, in 1989. So I think this is like almost 20, 22, 23 years playing at the pro level. I mean, he didn't play very much in the beginning, so I'm exaggerating a bit, but just shows you a little bit about his staying power. And he was by far the best player on the court today when they won that match, you know, and beating Lodra and his former partner, Zimonjic. And there was a lot at stake there because you knew Daniel didn't want to have Zimonjic beat him because, let's face it, Zimonjic is the guy who let him off, who got rid of him last year as a partner, thinking he'd do better with Lodra. So a lot at stake for Daniel today, and he played great. So it's going to be interesting, the final. They're playing a guy named Cabal, who really nobody's ever heard of before from Colombia, and Eduardo Schwenk from Argentina, who's a good player, been in three of the four Grand Slam semifinals the last couple of years, instead of the Bryans, who these guys upset. So it's going to be a lot different than playing the Bryans. They'll definitely be the favorites, but the fact that these guys upset the Bryans today means that Daniel and Max are going to have to be very wary of the final on Saturday.
Yeah, it'll be great. Some great tennis coming up on the weekend. Tom Tebbit, of course, is live in Paris at the French Open. I'm Roger Lajoie. You're listening to Aces on Sportsnet Radio, The Fan 590. And, of course, our continuing coverage of tennis goes all the way through the summer, in fact, into the early fall. We have about 12 shows scheduled. We have another one in a couple of weeks. And, of course, we'll keep you up to date throughout. And the Rogers Cup, our big event for sure. Roger at fan590.com is email. Roger at fan590.com. We welcome any feedback on the program. Give us an email. We'll read them throughout the course of the show. And stick around later in the program. We have the trivia question Tom has left for us. And we'll have a lucky winner again of two tickets to the Rogers Cup opening night on the Monday. A couple of cans of Wilson tennis balls. A great prize pack courtesy of Tennis Canada that's coming up later in the show. And Tom, we also have coming up later in the show a couple of special interviews you did. Team up for us.
Well, I talked to Bethany Mattek-Sands last week, and she's a really she's good at very soon, I think, unless the Williams sisters are playing. Williams sisters should get playing again. She's going to be the number one player in the United States. She's a really fun player to watch. She can hit all the shots. She plays very aggressively, not afraid to go to the net, and really she's a fun person to talk to because also I think, as many listeners may know, she's not afraid to take a chance or two with what she wears, making lots of fashion statements, wearing the black paint under her eyes like baseball players. So she's a very particular tennis player, but an intelligent woman as well, fun person to talk to, and obviously Patrick McEnroe, we all know about him from his brother John, and Patrick had a good tennis career as well, very good as a commentator, and I spent a lot of my time talking to him about tennis commentary, because goodness knows we all have our own opinions about who's good and who's good, who's bad at that kind of work.
Well, that's for sure, and I'll tell you what, one thing about a guy like that, Tom, you see a little bit of the personality of the brother. Really look forward to that interview coming up later in the show. Really look forward to being back in studio with you as we continue the Aces show throughout the course, Tom. We've had a lot of great feedback. I know we're going to have a lot of responses to the trivia. We'll email you the winner, and we will see you when you get back. And listen, enjoy Paris, my friend, and really enjoying doing the show with you because our feedback has been terrific. So enjoy, sir.
Great, Roger. Well, I may listen to the rest of the show on fan590.com.
That a boy. Get those numbers up. Make sure and get everyone to listen. Talk it up in Paris, for heaven's sakes, Tom.
Do my best.
Thank you very much, Tom. Tom Tebbit, live from Paris, joining us tonight on Aces. I'm Roger Lajoie. Coming up, Bethany Mattek-Sands very well could be the top women's player in the United States in very short time. Controversial on the court, great personality, Tom Tebbit's conversation with her, and Patrick McEnroe, one of the top tennis commentators in the world today, also in conversation with Tom Tebbit. And a little later, your chance to win Rogers Cup tickets and Wilson tennis ball, so don't go away. You're listening to Aces on Sportsnet Radio, The Fan 590.
This is Sportsnet Radio, The Fan 590.
It's a beautiful day to let it get away.
You're listening to Aces on Sportsnet Radio, The Fan 590. I'm Roger Lajoie here in our Toronto studios. Tom Tebbit is live at the French Open. He's gone away to a cafe or the Tour de Fel. He's going to walk around. I don't know. I don't know what you think. I mean, I'm sorry. This is so unfair. This is a debacle. Is what it is. He's supposed to be carrying this program. Now he carried it because we got some great interviews coming up, and he left the trivia prize. So you know what, Tom? If you're listening on fan590.com, and you better be, enjoy Paris, and thanks for being with us, pal. Coming up on the program, Patrick McEnroe, one of the top commentators in tennis, and Bethany Mattek-Sands, who very well, as Tom mentioned, could be the number one women's player in the United States before too long, for sure. This segment of Aces is brought to you by Corona Extra. Pick up your six packs of new Corona Extra limited edition bottles at the LCBO in the beer store. Visit findourbeach.ca to vote for your favorite bottle of Corona. All right. Bethany Mattek Sands later, but right now, one of the top tennis commentators around, and boy, does he sound like John McEnroe. But it's not John McEnroe. Anyone who follows tennis knows our conversation is next with Tom Tebbit and Patrick McEnroe.
Patrick McEnroe, welcome to Aces.
Thank you. Good to be here.
We're at Roland Garros. I'm just wondering how, for you, it fits in with the other four Grand Slams, just in terms of how much you enjoy being here and how you compare it to the other four Grand Slams.
Well, it's hard not to love Paris in the springtime, and really Paris anytime. But, you know, every slam has its unique idiosyncrasies, and obviously I love to watch clay court tennis. I think the way the game has changed in the last 5-10 years, it's made it much more interesting. It's more all-court, more aggressive, particularly on the men's side. So I think you're seeing a lot more variety, a lot more aggressive, positive tennis that's winning. So there's nothing like coming here in the morning when it's a little chilly. And one of my favorite things about the French Open are the ball kids doing their calisthenics in the morning. I love that, walking into the grounds and they're running up and down the grounds where it's, while it's quiet, and people are singing and doing their exercises. So there's something uniquely French about that. Obviously great matches and a lot of great drama, and probably here more than any other major, the crowd sort of inserts itself into matches, maybe more so than anywhere else.
How much did you enjoy it as a player? And obviously winning the doubles here makes a difference for you, I would think.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's a lot of great memories to do that. And obviously, clay was not my best surface in singles, although I did reach the third round 1 year, which these days for an American male wouldn't be bad. But in those days, it was, you know, come see, come saw, as they say. So, you know, it was very early in my career when I was able to win the doubles. So that was great. So every year coming back here, playing and doing television, it's always something you remember. And also, you know, obviously remembering my brother's big loss here was you know, probably the toughest loss of his career when he lost to Lendl in the 84 final. So that one still resonates a little bit, too.
Let's talk about tennis broadcasting. What would you say you've learned about your profession over the years?
Well, I think luckily when I first started, I think I had a pretty good knack for it. You know, I think when I was young, I was used to being asked a lot of questions because I was John's brother, so I was sort of used to being in that situation. But I think the thing I've learned over the years has been to, you know, have fun. I always say I try to educate and entertain at the same time and not take yourself too seriously. But I think I've learned, obviously, the ins and outs of the business and you know, how to be a play-by-play guy, how to be a color guy. So I think my versatility has improved over the years, so I'm able to pretty much do any role that they ask me to do. I started as a courtside guy with Cliff Drysdale and Fred Staley, and you know, that was a great learning experience for me when I started. So I think just the adaptability that I've been able to learn over the years has really helped me.
People never seem to be able to agree on whether somebody's a good or a bad broadcaster. Some people like Bud Collins, they didn't like him. Some people like your brother John, some people didn't. Why do you think that phenomenon exists?
Well, it's all based on personality, and you know, people will come up to me and say, "Oh, you know, you're a better announcer than your brother," or you know, something absurd like that. And I say, "My brother's great," and you know, because in sports, you're so used to your results defining who you are. You know, obviously, the more it's pretty cut and dry, whereas in broadcasting, it's what you like. You know, some people like a certain style, some people like a more subdued style, and I think it really just depends on the listener, and I think that's what makes it fun. You can have different personalities with different viewpoints and different approaches to how to broadcast that can be successful.
Growing up, who did you admire as a broadcaster?
You know, believe it or not, I like Dick Vitale a lot, which might make you cringe because he's really over the top. But, you know, I mean, I like the traditional broadcasters. I mean, you used to always listen to Pat Summerall and Tony Traber tennis-wise and at the U.S. Open. And even the years when I went to Wimbledon, you would hear Dan Maskell, and that's the other side of it where it's, you know, very much withdrawn in the English sort of British style. But I like Dickie V because I wasn't really a fan of basketball, but he just had this energy and excitement. And so, obviously, I don't go that over the top, but I always try to remember that you have fun. You know, it's about having fun and not taking yourself too seriously. And obviously, over the years, as I got into the profession, I would pay a little more attention to the Bob Costas of the world and people. Marv Albert was someone I grew up with in New York, you know, listening to watching the Knicks and the Rangers and different sports. So he was always someone that that I really enjoyed listening to. And I laughed that one year he actually did Wimbledon, if you remember, years ago when TNT did it for one year. So I used to imitate him, you know, imagine him doing tennis. So I used to say, you know, Sal Bruce with the ace. You know, so Marv, I'd love to see him do more tennis, but it only lasted one year.
You've worked with Cliff Drysdale a lot. Is he as laid back as he seems?
Yeah, Cliff's the greatest. And, you know, I learned a lot from him over the years. And when I first started, you know, broadcasting, Cliff was sort of the guy that was the lead guy, and along with Fred Stolle. So, you know, obviously over the years, I worked with Cliff more than anybody else as far as doing matches. And it's funny, people think that I used to get a lot of emails and now tweets and all that. You know, you and Cliff don't get along, or you get at each other. And that's really what we like to do. You know, we're great friends, and we kind of like that back and forth and that banter. So Cliff's really one of the guys that you know, when I work with him, it's really like just two guys sitting on a couch watching a game, or, you know, watching a match. And different dynamics with other people who don't have, the tennis background that Cliff does. But Cliff has found that balance of, you know, he knows everything that's going on in the court, but still being able to kind of set you up as the analyst to let you do your thing. And I think that's why Cliff has lasted so long in the business.
One of my favorite things with Cliff used to be putting on the goggles and flippers, which right. Which meant going into the tank or not right. trying anymore. Right. The goggles and flippers seems to have appeared. Is that because it's sort of politically incorrect to imply that a player is not trying?
I'm not sure why that's disappeared, but Cliff has had a lot of great phrases. And, you know, I used to always love when he would say, and when it was, you know, two sets all, three all, deuce, you know, dead, solid, even, you know, and he used to come up with that. So I always encourage him to use those lines, and because I think it makes Cliff, and you know, warm greetings and, you know, friendly hello and all that. So you know, it's nice to have your little phrases which people know you by. And I think Cliff is, you know, he's friendly, and I think that's the thing that people like about him. He's a friendly face, he's a friendly voice, and he makes it enjoyable.
How do you sort of size up your brother as a commentator? I'm sure that's a bit of a tough question, but what would you say are his strong points, and if he has any weak points, what would they be?
Well, I don't think it's tough at all. I think he's awesome. I mean, I think he has fun, you know, number one. I think obviously how great a player he was, and as big a personality as he is, I think he realized it's about the tennis, and it's not about him per se. But he's also very respectful of the game. He's very respectful of people. There's nobody that's worked with more people. I mean, he works for every single network that's ever been created. So he's worked with a lot of different people. So people have this idea of him that he's, you know, his ego is too big, but actually it's really the opposite. I mean, he's a great team player, and he works well with other people and with different styles. So I think he does a great job. And again, he's over the year, you know, he stays very involved in what's happening. So he knows all the young players coming up. And I think the fact that he still plays so much and loves to compete at the highest level that he can actually really has helped his broadcasting over the years.
I think Mary Carillo would have been a family friend growing up, and she mm-hmm. won the French Open mixed with John a long time ago. So you've known her for a long time. How do you assess Mary as a broadcaster?
Well, Mary, to me, brings something totally unique to coverage, because she's more of a real journalist than the rest of us. I mean, she looks at it from that eye. She doesn't have that. I mean, even though she was a player, you feel that she's not, you know, sucking up to the players at all. She's not sucking up to the associate. You know, we all have these conflicts of interest. You know, myself with Davis Cup and with the USTA, and so I have to balance that line in the way I broadcast. And so Mary always, to me, is really, you know, she's got her very strong opinions. She's a great storyteller, extremely smart and witty. And, you know, nobody is as well prepared as she is, you know, when she's getting ready to cover a match. So I think she's, you know, she does an unbelievable job. And obviously she's brought her talents to other areas outside of tennis, which I think really helps her in tennis, too. When she comes back to tennis, she's got a broader perspective.
What are your pet peeves about tennis broadcasting?
Well, you know, the biggest pet peeves is just the the lack of respect that tennis gets in the U.S. from a programming standpoint. And, you know, I think ESPN has done a better job over the years. And obviously I'm biased because I work for ESPN. But I think now, you know, that they're involved in all four majors, they have more of a commitment and more of an investment in tennis. But all the tape, you know, the tape match. I mean, the biggest pet peeve for us is the tape or live and, you know, those kinds of things. And I think with the different broadcasters, because tennis just doesn't sell enough in the U.S., you know, when NBC or CBS come in on the weekend, CBS is a little bit different because they can basically cover all day at the U.S. Open. But when NBC comes in on a weekend here, or when we're splitting it during the week with the tennis channel, I mean, in ESPN, you know, there's just it's hard for the viewer to get a sense. So I think the biggest pet peeve for me is that when the viewer gets screwed at home rather than being able to watch what they want to watch live and when they want to watch it.
Andre Agassi, in any appearance he's done on television, has been very impressive as a broadcaster, very astute guy, very smart guy. He seems to have chosen not to get into tennis broadcasting. Is that too bad? And do you have any reason why, know of any reason why he's decided not to become a broadcaster?
Well, probably because he thinks he has better things to do, and he's got a lot of interests, and obviously what he's done for kids and for children and education is probably far more important than what you could do in broadcasting. But I just don't think Andre wants to commit to it full on. I mean, I could certainly see him at some point popping in and maybe do the majors, and, you know, a little bit like what my brother does. But even my brother comes in and is basically here for the whole couple weeks. So I just think Andre has too many other things going on that he would want to make that full commitment. But obviously I was been lucky enough at the last couple of U.S. Opens to have him and my brother, which, you know, was awesome to see them two interact. And also, you know, Andre's got he loves analyzing tennis. I mean, that's all he did when he played, and almost overanalyzed it as a player. So obviously bringing that to the broadcast booth is pretty unique, and he's incredibly well-spoken. So I would love to see him do more. I think it'd be great for tennis.
Patrick, thank you very much for being on Aces.
And thank you very much indeed, Patrick McEnroe and Tom Tebbit, for providing that interview on Aces. Really an outstanding broadcaster. And, of course, John McEnroe kind of following his footsteps now after his career is done. Coming up on Aces, Bethany Mateksands, one of the top female tennis players in the world, on the rise, in conversation with Tom Tebbit. And your chance to win. Your chance to win for sure some great Rogers Cup prizes, tickets to opening night, and some tennis balls. We will tell you how in a moment. Tom Tebbit is in Paris. I'm Roger Lajoie. You're listening to Aces on Sportsnet Radio, The Fan 590.
Sportsnet Radio, The Fan 590. Roxanne.
You're listening to Aces on Sportsnet Radio, The Fan 590. I'm Roger Lajoie. Tom Tebbit is in Paris of the French Open, and he has left behind a fantastic prize for our trivia question, which I will give you, not now, in a few moments. And when I do, and when I prompt you, email at roger@fan590.com. roger@fan590.com. We will draw from among all the correct answers to the trivia question, and you'll win a fantastic prize. If you're a tennis fan, you are going to love it. You will get tickets for the Monday night, August the 8th, Rogers Cup. That's opening night. And two cans of Wilson U.S. Open tennis balls. Fantastic prize, courtesy of Tennis Canada. Trivia question is coming up shortly, so stay tuned here to Aces. And again, on behalf of Tom, thanks to so many of you who have been emailing the show and saying how much you're enjoying regular tennis coverage here on Sportsnet Radio, The Fan 590. Delighted to do it. Tom is such a pro and a joy to work with, believe me, and he's been around the game for so many years. It's my fun just to be a part of this program. We're on selected Thursdays throughout the course of the tennis season. We've got about a dozen shows. This is our third of the season, so thanks for your continuing support and coverage. Keep the emails coming at roger@fan590.com. And at some point when Tom and I are both in the studio, we'll really make a long time on the program so you can call in, get your questions and emails, and Tom will have your answers, because he's much more capable than me than giving you the answers, for sure. So Tom will have all that coming up for you on Aces. Appreciate your support so much, folks. This segment of Aces is brought to you by National Bank Financial Group. Need a smarter mortgage? All-in-one banking from National Bank gives you highly competitive mortgage rates plus a line of credit. For details, visit nbc.ca/all-in-one. That's nbc.ca/all-in-one. Well, I'll tell you what, Bethany Mattek-Sands has become a real dominant player in women's tennis. And with the departure of the Williams sisters from really being regular tournaments because of the injuries and everything that's gone by, women's tennis is kind of looking for someone to be that identifying voice. Now, she's maybe not quite there yet, but she is very close to being the number one tennis player in the United, based in the United States, in the world. And she's exciting to watch. And boy, she loves the outfit. She's quite the personality. Tom had a chance to catch up with Bethany Mattek-Sands.
Bethany, welcome to Aces.
Thank you for having me. It's good to be here.
You've been on the tour for a while now. What would you say are the fun parts of the tour that people really don't know about?
The fun parts of the tour, well, it's definitely not a day like today where you lose both singles and doubles, but, you know, I actually get a little time off now, so I'll maybe venture around Paris a little bit, maybe go down to the coast again. I was in Biarritz, actually, the week before French Open, surfing a little bit, so it's kind of nice actually having a little bit of time now to enjoy the cities that I travel to.
You'll be moving on to the grass next. I would think your game may be a little bit better for the grass, but how do you feel about making the change from clay to grass?
I'm actually going to make it kind of easy because I'm going to hard court first. I play hard court indoors in Copenhagen, and then I'll go to Eastbourne for the grass before Wimbledon. So, you know what? I can't hate on the dirt here. I've always done well on the clay. I've had some good results, and, you know, if you got to love the clay. But, you know, grass, I've had my best result at Wimbledon, and looking forward to it.
For the average person who doesn't understand very much about grass, how would you describe playing on grass compared to, say, playing on a hard court that somebody would play on in the public park or at their club?
You know, I would tell people to be ready because from a personal experience, the first day I step on grass, I ask myself, why am I playing? Because it's frustrating. You go from getting high bounces, you know, around your shoulder to bounces by your knees and ankles. So, you know, it's interesting. Obviously, the grass at Wimbledon is the best and plays similar to a hard court. So I'm looking forward to that grass. But until you get there, you never know what kind of bounce you're going to get.
Is there anything you have to do physically to prepare to make sure your body's ready for grass?
Well, actually, the tennis tour, kind of the girls on tour term it grass ass because you actually have to bend a lot to get low, so everybody's ass gets sore pretty much. And so you got to have strong legs, get some good workouts in, and that's really, for us, it's just a matter of getting used to it. So I think once we get past that soreness, we're good to go.
And the All England Club is a pretty special place in tennis. Can you recall the first time you went there, and generally, how do you feel about the place now that you've been there a few times?
It is. It's walking in there is like taking a step back in time. I mean, it's very prestigious. I mean, it still looks similar to a lot of the pictures you see from back in the day, and it's very cool that they've been able to keep the tradition. Obviously, it's very conservative, so, and which I've tend to kind of make some headlines for not being conservative, but you know, you gotta love Wimbledon. I mean, they do a fantastic job. Like I said before, their grass is the best there. I mean, the guy who takes care of it, I mean, it's great until the pros get there and beat it all up.
Well, you brought up the subject of maybe making a few waves at Wimbledon with your fashion statements. The fact that you have to wear basically white at Wimbledon, how does that constrict you and what your approach would be fashion-wise to Wimbledon?
Yeah, Wimbledon's tough because everyone thinks of tennis, you know, being your tennis whites, and so I'm very anti-white when I play, actually. I wear a lot of black, a lot of bright colors. So Wimbledon is a tough one for me. You got to kind of pick out things you like that are white. But, you know, again, it goes with the whole nostalgia of the place, it's the history, and, you know, at the same time, I think it's very cool, but I got to be a little creative.
So can you give us any hints about what you might be planning for Wimbledon this year?
Honestly, I actually don't even know. I've been wearing Under Armour for the last year and a half, so I got to have a little talk with them and see if they have any new stuff coming out. I'd like to get rid of the stuff I have now. Obviously, it's tough to pack for 2.5 months on the road, so I didn't bring any Wimbledon stuff with me, so I actually got to place an order. So the high socks will obviously be there. I will have my eye black, and that's all I can tell you for now.
Right. when you think about the history of Wimbledon and fashion, one of the things was Anne White, and she wore that body legging, the whole body. How would you, would that be something you would have admired and maybe liked to have tried at some point?
It's funny you say that, because I've considered bringing that back. So, you have a good thought there. You're reading my mind. But, and it's actually, for Wimbledon, it's actually interesting to kind of go back and see kind of the funky outfits when women actually started a new trend in tennis, went from even long dresses to shorter ones. And actually, that's kind of where I'd get some of my ideas for Wimbledon is looking back and kind of bringing back something.
When Bethany Mattek was, say, an eight-year-old or something, what were the kind of fashion statements she was making then?
When I was eight, it's funny, my aunt actually made all my tennis clothes for me. So even at a young age, I was getting all these funky skirts and shirts that match it. I got to pick out my fabrics and prints. But off the court, I feel like I never matched. I mean, I would wear flannel shirts, hiking boots. I know when I was really young, you know, I had super long hair. I'd always be in like 100 braids and, you know, different hairdo every day. But, you know, it's definitely changed a lot. I think I was more girly when I was little than I am now.
Well, things have changed a lot. I'm just wondering, was there anything that sort of struck you in some way that made you want to be a little bit more of a sort of a trailblazer in terms of fashion and tennis?
Yeah, well, I remember watching a match a few years ago, and the girls on TV were dressed head to toe exactly the same, and they both had a blonde ponytail, and on TV, I couldn't even tell who was who. So, you know, from a fan's point of view, there's no way they'd be able to tell. So it was from that moment on, I was going to be different.
And some of the things, you know, the leopard skin, et cetera, are a little bit different. I'm just wondering, have people ever been mean in some of the things they say about what you wear? Comments?
Oh, yeah, I totally have. It's, you know, I'm not as big of a badass as everyone thinks. You know, I do have feelings, and, you know, I put myself out there because I enjoy it. I mean, obviously, looking back, there's some things I probably wouldn't wear again, but in the same sentence, I'm glad I did it. You know, it's something, you know, that I got over fear of, you know, being embarrassed or, you know, what will people think? And, you know, you kind of get over that. And just, I was myself. And, you know, that's the most I wanted. And, but yeah, I try not to look at a lot of comments. My husband, I think, has seen more of the bad comments than I have. I just don't want to look. If someone loves me, cool, but I don't want to see the haters.
So you actually say there are a couple of statements, maybe you regret things you would maybe not have done. What, could you name some of those, or a couple of those?
I don't think that I would not have done. It's just probably I wouldn't do again. So I remember I wore a cowboy hat at U.S. Open, and, you know, it was more of a dare, actually, to kind of wear it. And I did end up getting fined for non-tennis apparel, but I did it. So it was actually, in a way, I kind of got over a hump there, and I won the bet.
The fact that you're reasonably well-known or quite well-known for some of your strong fashion statements, do you think it sort of overshadows the fact that you're a very fine tennis player? And do you ever worry that people maybe don't recognize you for being as good a player as you are?
Well, you know, first and foremost, tennis is always my first priority. You know, as much fun as I have dressing up and doing things off court, on court, whatever, wins make me the happiest. You know, I have yet to win a title, and that's my goal. I want to hold a trophy, a singles trophy, up in my hands, and it's been a dream since I've been little, and that's still going to be the number one priority. But, you know, I think there's nothing wrong with being open and letting my personality out, and I think a lot of the other players, it's tough. They don't really show themselves. So I guess I'm one of a kind then.
You're known on the court for being fairly extroverted, showing your emotions, obviously making the fashion statements, but talking to your husband, he tells me that you have sort of another side as well, that you like to read a lot and that you like to do a lot of sort of things, the brain teasers thing. Is that a side of you that you think a lot of people don't recognize?
Oh, I'm sure. I mean, I think I have a lot of sides that a lot of people don't know. Some probably not as good as others, but yeah, I mean, I'm really, I like to be creative, actually. I do have brain teasers on my iPad that I'm always doing. I like to use my left side, my right side. I love art. I wish I could draw better. I love cooking. You know, anything to kind of be creative is really a lot of fun for me.
Well, Bethany, thanks for being on Aces today. We really appreciate you having you as a guest.
Thanks a lot. Yeah, I look forward to seeing everyone soon.
Sounds like a charming young lady, doesn't she? Bethany Matic Sands in conversation with her own Tom Tebbett. It's Aces on Sportsnet Radio, the Fan 590. I'm Roger Lajoie. Okay, we've been teasing you all night. Time for our trivia, courtesy of Mr. Tebbett and the folks at Tennis Canada. Email Roger at fan590.com if you've got the right answer. We'll draw from all the correct entries at Roger at fan590.com. Our quiz question for tickets to the Monday night, August 8th, Rogers Cup night, and two cans of Wilson U.S. Open tennis balls. The question is, Rafael Nadal has won 5 French Opens. How many different players has he beaten in the final? 1, 2, or 3? It's easy as 1, 2, or 3. How many different players has Rafael Nadal beaten in the French Open to win it? Roger at fan590.com, Roger at fan590.com. Email in, we'll draw from all the correct entries, and we'll give the big prize out in our next edition of Aces, which is Thursday, June 16th. Thursday, June 16th, our next edition of Aces. Roger at fan590.com, email in, and you could win. Coming up on Sportsnet Radio, the Fan 590 shortly, we have the Soccer Show with Nigel Reed between 8 and 9, Hoops 9 to 10, Showdown, Joe Ferraro here for Showdown between 10 and 11, and Jeff Sammet, of course, on the Jeff Sammet Show coming up. I'll be with you again Saturday between 10 and 2 o'clock. Thanks go out to Derek Brandeo, our technical director, Kayla Harris, the producer of the show, of course, Tom Tebbett, who is in Paris at the French Open, and I'm Roger Lajoie. Thanks to all of you again for your emails at roger at fan590.com. Email for the trivia and email us your thoughts and questions. Tom and I will take your thoughts every week here when we have Aces on Thursdays. I'll be back between Saturday again between 10 and 2 o'clock. Thanks once again. And again, the email address, roger at fan590.com. Email your answer in. A great prize available every time on Aces. We'll talk to you again in a couple of weeks. I'll talk to you between 10 and 2 on Saturday. But right now, coming up next is The Soccer Show. You've been listening to Aces with Tom Tebbett. I'm Roger Lajoie. Sportsnet Radio, The Fan 590.